It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee.
Emory's Dr. Carlos Del Rio compares Atlanta's age problem to third world countries.
Downtown Atlanta is as bad as Zimbabwe or Harare or, you know, or Durban.
I think we all assume that being compared to a third world country is a bad thing.
We don't have anything. We got trains that go, bah, bah. You know, they're like from 150 years ago. We're becoming a third world country.
In a choice between first and third, we'd all choose first, right? But third world probably doesn't mean what you think it means. And when we use a word but aren't sure of the definition, you know what time it is, right? It's time to break it down.
Ooh, break it down, baby, because I want y'all all to know. Let me break it down for you again.
Break it down now.
Break it down.
When the terms first world, second world, and third world were invented, they did not refer to the economy at all. They were political distinctions. The first use of third world dates back to the early 1950s. The French historian Alfred Sauvy wrote an article about world politics. He was trying to describe the state of world politics during the Cold War, and he reached back into history to find a good comparison. He compared the Cold War era to the French Revolution.
Deacon, you have to watch this guy. His name is Napoleon. He is a very famous French dude.
In the late 18th century, France was divided into three estates. There was the first estate. That included about 130,000 people connected to the Catholic Church, mostly men. They were archbishops, friars, monks, nuns, and other ordained members of the church. The second estate was the nobility, people with titles, barons, chevaliers, dukes, and counts.
Greetings. I am the Count. They call me the Count because I love to count things.
Just a note, the Count of Monte Cristo, for example, was not a member of the Second Estate because he wasn't a real count. He just made up that title while he was incognito.
I'm a count, not a saint.
Anyway, the Third Estate was the commoners. They had no titles, they paid all the taxes, and they didn't get a lot of privileges.
Help! Help! I'm being repressed, bloody peasant!
Historian Alfred Sauvy said in 1952, that the world was then divided into three factions. The first world was the U.S. and all its NATO allies. The second world was the Soviet Union, China, and its communist allies. And the third world was everyone else. So the comparison Sauvy was making wasn't about how much money any country had or how advanced they were. It was about political alliances and the nations that got left out. He said,
"This third world, ignored, exploited, despised like the third estates, also wants to be something."
But as the terms first world and third world became more common, people noticed that most of the third world countries were former colonies. Many were underdeveloped. People started using third world to refer to nations without a lot of industrial advancements, nations that were war-torn, whose people were poor.
"Well, I am king."
"Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers."
In the meantime, Mao Zedong put forth his theory of three worlds. In Mao's view, the third world included countries that had been exploited. The first world included the superpowers.
"Mother Twin Powers, activate!"
The second world was the less than superpowers. That's not what most people mean when they say third world, and it does make a difference. China is part of the second world, in the Frenchman's view, but it's part of the exploited third world, according to Mao. A lot has changed since the Cold War in the 1950s. Now, many former third world countries have stronger economic growth than some of the original first world countries. Some economists call that the Great Convergence. Basically, global trade means that inequality is shrinking between nations. Their interests and economies are converging. And there's one final addition to the three-world theory, a fourth world. The fourth world includes people who don't have a nation or land defined by borders. That's like the Kurds in the Middle East or the Maoris of New Zealand. So those are the basics of the first world versus the third world. But let's get a real expert into this conversation. Nick Marr is professor of history at Oglethorpe University. Okay, so Nick, how accurate was all that?
I think you did great. I do think there are some things we might want to sort out a little bit, both in terms of what Sauvy really meant in the first place And then also maybe how we use it today and some of the problems with using the term.
Well, first let's go back to Sovi, who was trying to talk about the Cold War. And here's a question for me, because technically the real end of the Cold War might have been the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. But we'd started using Third World to refer to poor nations long before 89. Why?
Well, you know, in fact, Sovi himself starts off his sort of famous article by saying that what he's referring to as the Third World is what the UN was already calling the underdeveloped world. So he's defining it as essentially economically. It is an economic category as well as a political category from the get-go in his mind. And as a minor point, he actually, in sort of in jest, as he said, really saw the First World being equivalent to the First Estate as really the Soviet world, which is to say, like the clergy, it was an ideologically defined world, whereas he liked to compare the industrialized West, the capitalist world, essentially to the nobility. And so there's kind of an odd inversion with the first and second worlds.
It's okay, but since then, that inversion, when we refer to first world and third world, and very few people even talk about the second world or the fourth world, for that matter. When we're talking about first world and third world, we're talking about rich and poor for the general public. Isn't that fairly true?
It is true. And in terms of how Sovi was understanding that basic distinction and his comparison to the French Revolution, he was really on the side of the third world in the sense that the third estate, especially from a Frenchman's perspective, writing in 1952, he was saying the third estate was the inheritor of the sort of champion of modernity, of progress, and that the third world was going to necessarily be that. So he was really, that the distinction between wealthy and poor, he was really saying that the wealthy was a condition of privilege, which ultimately was not going to be tenable in terms of history in the long run.
Although it also had an implication of exploitation. When we talk about first world and third world, and especially as we move forward away from Sovi, closer to today, closer to the end of the Cold War, we were talking about former colonies. We were talking about a first world that had become rich on the backs of the third world.
You're exactly right. And in fact, the sort of post-colonial thought about what we sometimes call the third world is the notion that these different sort of categories of first and third world are, first of all, kind of have a linear relationship in terms of the third world presumably aspires to be like the first world, but also that the first world somehow got ahead by exploiting the third world, and that there's a necessary sort of competitive element into this relationship. Nonetheless, his point about the third world being despised, I think what he's getting at and what I think still the term kind of resonates with us in some of the clips that you used, is the idea that the third world somehow is partially responsible for its own condition, and that the first world then either can pat itself on the back for being ahead or feel guilty for having exploited in that kind of view, but also finally, I think, kind of embrace some sort of noblesse oblige idea that the first world should now do right and help the third world in this kind of missionary uplift, which is also problematic for a variety of reasons.
Robbie Medved tweets this to us, that he says he's called things third world many, many times, both ironically and seriously. If you've ever described something as the third world and you want to tell us how accurate that was, if you think that term is offensive, you can tweet us at OST Talk or join the conversation on Facebook. My guest is Oglethorpe University history professor Nick Marr. Now, the terms first world, second world, third world have fallen out of favor with a lot of historians and economists and political scientists. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think there's two reasons. One is partly because it never was a very precise term in the first place, that it was never really that much.
Yeah, the
in
fact that
favor.
We're having this much right. discussion over what it
exactly.
means.
Exactly. But I do think that with the end of the Cold War, the idea that whatever we might think the Second World was, that somehow it was no longer in play. And so the idea that there was just first and third was a problem. I think that there's sort of two different ways of looking at whatever currency the term still has. One is that if you self-identify as from the first world and you refer to the third world, it is usually in a pejorative sense. Something along the lines of, you know, I don't know, the sort of recent claims that don't know, that Atlanta is becoming like the third world in terms of an HIV crisis. Or if you think of it in the way we use it as an adjective in almost anything, if you add it to third world politics, third world violence, third world education, in almost every sense, we're using that as a pejorative term. If, however, you self-identify as living in the emerging or the developing world or the global south or the third world, however you might define it, you might be using it in a more positive. You might put a positive spin on it in the sense that you're part of the third world because you're opting to sort of seek some third way, that there's still some history to be done, and that maybe it like the Third Estate was an important sort of world historical group, the third world can be that still.
And there's also a sense among many, certainly many articles that I read, this sense that perhaps those in the so-called third world have an opportunity to move forward and develop without making the mistakes they think first world countries made.
No, you're exactly right. And that there can be a couple of different ways that that might proceed. One is sort of this idea that maybe it is the path to progress, to economic progress, to social justice might be different, and different at least in the sense of not being dependent on the favors of the first world. And if you look at recent sort of trade relations within the sort of self-identified global south, a lot of that trade is increasing because they're trading with each other. And from 1980, where the global south had about 8% of its trade internally, the global south now trades within itself close to a quarter of its trade, about 23%. So there is a sort of sense that they can, the third world as such, can develop without necessarily an increasing dependence on the first world.
So then let's talk about what the fourth world is, because that's a relatively recent term that has been used to talk about certain political distinctions. What is the fourth world?
The fourth world, there's been actually a number of different definitions that are offered. And I think that, the first one is the one that you cited in your intro, this idea that there are these peoples essentially without geographic states. It sometimes is used today to refer to essentially those that might live in circumstances which we would equate with a developing world, but they're living within the nation states of the first world. So the kind of pockets of urban or rural poverty that we have in the United States sometimes are referred to as the fourth world.
Which, again, brings us back to why we're talking about this from Georgia at all, which is that not only has Donald Trump compared the U.S. to possibly becoming a third world country, but specifically here in Atlanta, we have an HIV crisis. And there have been some who said the HIV crisis in Atlanta is worse than any many third world nations, which would imply that there are these pockets that you were describing of as the third world. Maybe they're not comparable to the third world. Maybe they are a fourth world.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right in that the sort of the idea of the first world as somehow this kind of monolithic and thing-like success story is often also another problem. So it's not only a problem to talk about the third world, it's kind of a problem to talk about the first world, because it often neglects what even back in 1962 Michael Harrington referred to as the other America, this idea that there are those who really do not enjoy the benefits of the standard of living that you might see if you look at the sort of big numbers of GDP or GNP or income sort of average income, that those who really are not enjoying those benefits somehow constitute this other America, which is this ongoing problem. And it's not just true in the United States. A lot of developing countries also have these embedded kind of invisible communities of those who really are not benefiting this sort of the same as the averages might indicate.
So what's a better term to use then? Let's say that I am trying to make Americans understand how severe the problem of poverty is here, or the problem of HIV infection in Atlanta. And I don't want to use the term as bad as a third world country. Is there a better way to make that, to put that in context?
It's a really good question. I think that there's, it is one of these questions that we want to be very careful about how we speak about it, because we don't really essentially want to offend any people, but also we don't want to diminish or kind of reduce the complexity of a problem. So there's an academic journal called Third World Quarterly, and I just out of curiosity I was looking it up. It started in 1979, and it still is a flourishing journal. And they, in their own mission statement, actually they seem to prefer the term emerging nations. even developing nations has a bit of a problem, the idea that somehow they're undeveloped, as if this is some 21st century version of a kind of civilized versus uncivilized, that it's developed versus undeveloped, that emerging has some popularity. There are those who have put forth this idea that we should refer to, in the kind of spirit of Sauvie, the majority world, that it is the majority of the population that live below the kind of standard of living of the first world. The one observation I have, I guess, is that if even in that the recent CDC discussion of the HIV crisis in Atlanta, they don't use the term third world. And in fact, I think the professor from Emory does not use the term third world. It's the media often uses it as a shorthand. So if you mention an African country, then the media will often sort of just, I don't know, translate that into this term, the third world. I think it often comes from politicians in the media, and it's very rare that sort of, I don't know, the kind of scholarly world would use the term these days because it's so fraught with the kind of baggage of history.
Well, this media person won't be using it anymore. That is Nick Marr. He's a professor of history at Oglethorpe University. Nick, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure, Celeste. Thank you.